This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview Kevin Ogar.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Blutz. I'm here with Doug Larson and Chris Morrow, CTP behind the camera. And we are here with our guest, Kevin Ogar. And we're going to be talking about all sorts of Kevin Ogar stuff today.
Including his ability to ginger so hard.
Yes.
We're going to define what ginger means to him.
And if you're just listening, then of course, as we always say, you're going to miss out. Because Kevin's wearing a sweet shirt, if you're listening. Says, I would ginger you so hard.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shirts.
It's fantastic.
Another thing you've got going on today, besides your shirt, is you're sporting some shorts.
Yeah, underneath my regular shorts, I'm sporting some Stacey Tovar shorts. It's actually what I asked for.
I didn't know you were actually wearing them.
I'm actually wearing them underneath here.
And so you're saying
the famous white booty shorts?
Yeah, so I walked into the Reebok tent. I said, I need Stacey Tovar shorts because I was told that she was going to be by the Barbells for Boobs tent, which is where I'm spending most of my time this weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, if she's going to be there in booty shorts, I got a challenger to a booty short showdown.
Oh, man.
A who wore it better. So I'm wearing them all day until she stops by, and then I'm stripping down to just those shorts.
Is this happening? We can make sure to be there.
I want
to
be there.
Yeah. I have no, like, she just found out about this because I posted it on Instagram. Like, she didn't even know it was happening until about 30 seconds ago.
All the best things in life just sort of spring up.
She may still not know. She may not have checked Instagram yet. Who knows?
We need to make sure that
you know the best thing about your situation, Kevin.
We got to communicate with Stacey.
You can go up to somebody, Kevin, or you can go up to Stacey Tovar and say, "I would really like it if you would do this for me." You could insert anything there. And if she says no, she's gonna feel like a real bitch about it. Like, really, you're not gonna do this for me? Well, I changed my mind. I'll do anything you want.
Well, I was told when I got hurt that I was inappropriate before I got hurt, and now that I'm in a wheelchair, I'm really trying to push the envelope of how far I go before people kind of get a little freaked out.
Are you like an old man will like push the limits of cursing and raunchy behavior? Because like, well, fuck it, I'm old. I mean, who's going to say something to me?
Yeah.
You are, I mean, you might as well utilize.
What percentage do you think you've pushed it further than you would have normally?
Oh, way further than I've ever pushed
it. Like, is this like 15% or are we talking like 500%?
We're talking at least 100% farther.
Yeah. Yeah, 200% increase in inappropriate behavior.
So we have a plan at some point in time whenever I get a chance, we're going to wrap my legs in like foam or something like that and have me wear pants and roll down the street with some people and wait till we're in this big crowd. I wanted to do it this weekend, but I figured people would freak out a little bit too much. is make sure my legs are nice and padded and roll around with some friends and make sure one of them's kind of skittish and emotional and just throw my chair sideways and like completely eat it hard and turn around, point right at them and be like, "You did this to me. Why would you push me out of my chair?" And see how
ow,
I cry.
Ow.
That's another good one. I'm like, yeah, we'll give you a wheelchair ride. Go ahead and sit down. And then the second they touch my legs, I scream ow really loud and see if they freak out about it.
Well, they probably freak out every time, right?
Yeah. Every time.
Convince someone to stab you in the leg or something.
I've had
and then freak out if they go too deep.
I've had friends ask if they could to tell they ignites my legs, and that's a real thing. So they keep asking if they can stab me in the leg with a fork and see if I can feel it.
Jesus,
I haven't let them yet. I have good friends.
Like, you know, I can't feel it, but there's still the risk of infection and structural damage. I'd rather not add on to the situation.
I'm still gonna bleed. Like,
it's not, still gonna bleed. It's not a good thing.
Yeah, we were talking earlier. I got a buddy who's got an arm that's paralyzed. And, one of the biggest things for him is just beating up his arm sometimes. He doesn't realize that he's, you know, dragging it across something where it's on something hot.
Yeah.
And then you have that risk of infection or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I do that all the time. Like, I'll hear something like thud. Like, we'll drive here and we'll take a turn and I'll hear something like thud real hard against the door. And I'm like, what the hell? And I look down and it was my leg, like, just blasting the door.
Oh, man.
Or I'll like wheel around and like I can't figure out why my chair won't move. And it's because my foot's like caught in a corner and I'm just trying to like wrench it through. There's complete meathead. Like, you won't move, chair? I'm going to make you move.
If it doesn't fit, force it.
Yeah.
You
know? That's the goal.
That's what we always used to say back in the Navy.
Well, you forget how simple of a lesson pain is, that the only thing it's there for is to keep you from just dragging your flesh through situations you really shouldn't be doing. And when it's gone or it's, you know, it's dulled, next thing you know, you could be shutting your car or your leg in a car door or some shit. I mean, it's just that easy to do. You lose your ability to tell where things are.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
Well, so you were what would be the proper terminology? Paralyzed?
Yeah.
So this would be like 6 months ago, or is this last year?
Almost, like... Six months and 14 days.
Yeah. I was at the OC Throwdown.
Man. Yeah.
And that was out here.
Yeah, it's real close to here. I'm actually staying. I have to drive past the fairgrounds where I got injured like every single time I want to go to the games.
What goes through your head when you make that drive?
Just really bugging.
So far you seem remarkably zen about it.
Could you fill in everybody who may not know the details? Because the day that it happened, I had friends that were there. They were taking video. They sent me the footage, and it didn't look like an epic, you know, traumatic thing. It was like, oh, it's like Kevin kind of fell down, and then that was that.
So you know, we were doing that 3-rep max snatch, which was kind of my bread and butter. Like I was wholeheartedly expecting to win that event. I didn't think anyone there was going to really out-snatch me.
Yeah.
What were you going for that day?
I was starting with 235. I wanted to get up to like 275.
Oh. So you're not an inexperienced weightlifter?
No.
No.
Not.
You were trained and strong and capable, and your form was probably fantastic.
Yeah, I mean,
there was no reason to think something would go wrong.
You know, it was one of those things, like, and everyone out there has lifted weights before, has kind of felt one of these before where I went up and the pull felt good and I caught it and the catch just felt like off, like I just wasn't right. I just didn't want to stand up with it, and I was like, it's 235. I'm not worried about this weight. I'm gonna dump it and just pick the bar back up and start over. Like there's no reason to try to. I actually, ironically enough, was dumping the bar so I wouldn't hurt my elbow. In retrospect, I'd probably just rather have the elbow injury. But, so, you know,
it makes my elbow pain not seem so bad anymore.
Yeah, I was just bitching about my elbow yesterday. I'm like, well,
yeah,
perspectiving.
So I bailed, backwards. It wasn't the greatest bail I've ever had, but not the worst bail I've ever had. And next thing I know, I was, in incredible pain.
Yeah. So. From what I saw, it was like the bar met your shoulders, like almost like simultaneously your butt met the ground. Is that right?
Sort of. The theory is in the initial hit's not what did it in. Not a lot I can talk about as far as like what exactly happened, because there's some stuff going on with that right now.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't seem to me that the initial hit off the top of my shoulders is what.
Yeah.
It kind of looked like it folded your spine into a C, like it kind of like smushed you, or like it did it break in the middle of your back? Is that what happened?
Low back. Like T11, T12, like right above where your lumbar spine starts.
Gotcha.
Right.
So.
So a lot of people, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it sounds like there's some things going on in the background. You might not be able to talk about everything, but I have like, especially like older weightlifting coaches, you know, they go, you know, they're being, you know, they're like, oh, you know, is CrossFit dangerous? You know, doing these movements under fatigue and things like that. You know, what's your opinion now after this has happened? And they kind of point at you as
the
example.
To say CrossFit's dangerous because I'll say this about my accident. If you watch the video that's online, you will see the weights behind me perfectly stacked up when I go to lift, and then after I get hurt, you'll see the weights about 5 feet farther back. So that's pretty much all I can say about what actually injured me. But to say like I got injured because of CrossFit or because of weightlifting or whatever the hell you want to say is like saying some guy's out running, gets hit by a drunk driver, and that's running's fault.
Right, right.
Yeah, people conveniently somehow overlook every other major sport where injury is just, this is a price you pay, or it's a risk that's there when you're pushing things to the outer boundaries of what you can do. I mean, it's always, I mean, people get hurt in football or soccer or fucking T-ball, imagine. I mean, injuries happen when the effort is being pushed to max.
What happened to me, the bar had to hit me, in my low back at the exact right spot, at the exact right angle, the exact right time for this to happen to me. They told me if it had hit me like an inch or two in a different direction, I'd still be up and walking around. I'd be hurt, but I would still be walking around. So, I mean, it's a 1 in a million shot. Like I was I can personally say that, you know, I was the only person in Craig Hospital for rehab that got hurt by a barbell. There were plenty of people there who were hurt from skiing, from other sports, from jumping off of buildings and
from every conceivable activity. There's
a guy there that got hurt. He was just wrestling around with his friends and fell over his couch wrong. He's quadriplegic now.
Wow.
So, I mean, like, there's inherent risk with everything.
Do you know of any other case of paralysis that's relatively well known you're able to look up after your injury of people who were hurt?
I actually,
with barbells, or
I actually searched for some, and I can't find a single case of someone being paralyzed by a barbell. And it may be out there, and I may just not be really good at using the Google machine. But
you called it a Google machine, so I don't think you're good at using a Google machine.
but I can't find a single case of someone being paralyzed. I mean, I can find cases of people like breaking like legs or femurs or elbows right. or whatever, but not someone getting paralyzed.
This is the thing that always seems to happen. It happened. It was what it was. It's exceptionally high profile because you are everybody who wants something to hold against CrossFit looked right to you, which made this situation all the more bizarre. Mm-hmm. Even people like, you know, just maybe like 3 weeks ago on the Joe Rogan podcast, and we're hearing him saying that's proof of why you really shouldn't be pushing barbells to extremes. These guys are doing these max lifts and they're pushing for reps and it's just not safe to do. I think everybody's got to take pause and realize this is one isolated event that happened against extraordinarily, you know, small odds.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe the only guy who's ever happened to in the history of barbells, which is a long history.
I think what people are forgetting about like weight training is that no one ever, no matter if you're just a weightlifter or a CrossFitter, just goes in and goes, I'm going to snatch. All right, that's it. See you later. If you look at like Russian training, they deadlift, they snatch or do their Olympic lift and then they squat. Or in America, most of the times we like squat, Olympic lift, and then there's always a sequence and to think that like anyone going into any lift is 100% is stupid. And what you also got to remember about my accident is that I wasn't lifting a high percentage of my one rep max. It was probably about 70%, you know, and it's a weight that I've hit for a set of five in the gym being fatigued perfectly safe. Like it's not like I was going for, I was smart enough to know that like I had just ran 3 miles under load. I'm not going to come in and take, you know, my 3 rep max snatch and be able to hang snatch it for 3. Yeah.
It's nothing people would forget. Like you say, how could he do that? He should know better than to try this and under these conditions. But you did know.
If you
asked anyone, if we were sitting there going to watch you do that, and you said, what are the odds any one of these guys would be seriously hurt or paralyzed? We would all say, as much as we know, we've all been around this shit for over 20 years or whatever, our whole lives, we'd say, that's just not going to happen. I've never heard of it happening. Mm-hmm. We would just say it's the most infinitesimally small likelihood of all.
Well, I hit 245 in the back for 3 before I walked out there. That was originally going to be my opener. And when I was walking out, my training partner said, hey, no one's hit over 230. Just go for 235.
Yeah, you're intentionally being conservative too.
So, I mean, it wasn't the weight. It wasn't the load. It wasn't the movement. There were, again, those extenuating circumstances that are kind of out of my realm of talking about right now that caused some problems.
Now, after you became injured, where did you go?
Western Medical Santa Ana. They got me there pretty quickly, and as luck would have it, you know, I always say like God had to be on my side because the second best spinal surgeon in California happened to be on call that night and happened to be open up enough to get me in.
Mm. You ended up being paralyzed, but what other risks were being mitigated when you went in?
Well, they couldn't give me any like painkillers because they didn't know exactly what was going wrong with me, you know. Since this has never really happened before, there was really no protocol for it, so they couldn't give me painkillers or anything, so I kind of had to deal with it until...
I guess this pain would be not your typical... Man, that wad was tough pain. This is a deep, terrible, fearing...
This is like pain. Every nerve in my body felt like it was on fire.
Really? Your body must have been in a... alarm switch in your brain must have been
fingers
flipped.
And, fingers, I mean, head, ears, everything. Every inch of me was just on fire. So
it's like your nervous system just didn't know what was going on.
No, my spinal cord had been just torn in half. It was freaking out. My whole body was in shock. Like you can see in the video at a certain point where my whole body just goes completely locked out.
The system just gets overrided.
It's your system's natural reaction to something like this. It goes into shock and tenses up completely. They try to keep further damage from happening. And so they were worried about me going into shock. They were worried about my body being such in shock that it completely shut down and I'd be dead. So the survival rate for a complete severing of your T11, T12 was pretty low, but only because most of the time it's from like a 70 mile an hour car crash.
Right. There's other things going on there. Yeah. This was, isolated to just your spine.
So they told me it was literally like taking that whole car crash just to my spine.
When you have an injury like that, imagine, I mean, I've had some injuries, can't compare to this obviously, but we've all been hurt to some extent, and that time period is a weird, I mean, everything's a daze. You don't know really what's going on. I mean, do you recall any specific memory from this period where, I mean, everything had to be coming in flashes of pain and light and confusion? And
I was so in and out the first like week that I was in the hospital. Like, I'll have people come up to me, and I've had friends, and I'll remember a little bit after they say something. Like, I'll remember flashes of stuff.
Yeah.
But like, I had friends like fly out from Colorado. I had friends fly out from Missouri. I had family fly out from Missouri, and I barely remember them being there. For like the first like 5 or 6 days, I was in the hospital because I was just so drugged up and kind of dazed, and you know, even after I got out of the ICU, they moved me up to I guess like general care. Like even at that point, I was still so out of it and still like.
Yeah, I'm assuming you went undergo some did some surgery.
Yeah, I had two surgeries. So I had the first one that came into the side. I have some pretty gnarly scars too, which is, you know, chick stick scars. So I have two scars over here. One, they had to puncture my lung, like deflate my lung, and go in through the side to put my spine back in line.
Oh man!
So my doctor is like sitting there, and I don't remember this at all. Luckily, my doctor came in and was explaining to my girlfriend and my training partner Matt, like what the surgery entailed, like survival rates for the surgery, like just kind of trying to prep us and
getting the heavy stuff out of the way.
Yeah. So
they don't go in from the back. They went in from the side.
They went in from the side. Cause they couldn't go in. They couldn't go in from the back and safely like realign my spine without potentially messing it up worse. And so they, split me open, use like forceps to kind of like split my ribs apart, which are still, I think, dislocated to this day. I still like, have them pop all the time. And then the doctor was telling me afterwards, like they had to like take out my organs and like set them on the table next to me.
I'm gonna throw up. That's intense, man.
And like go deflate the lung and then go through there to put the spine back together. And
like took you apart and reassembled you.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so now I'm getting a sense of like you would definitely want the absolute best. This is a lot going on. You need a surgeon who is just like almost divine in his powers.
So there's a less, I think it was like 35% survival rate for the surgery.
God. What? I'm surprised. I'm assuming the surgery was absolutely necessary.
It was either a 35% chance of, or like 35 or 38% chance of dying or like surviving the surgery, or a 0% chance surviving without the surgery. So,
wow. Yeah. I'm always interested in the stats when people are going in for surgery, like, you know, the choices they're having to make.
Yeah.
Obviously this sounds like,
I didn't have a choice. Yeah. Like it was either do it or not do it and not be around for much longer. So
yeah. Two surgeries. So yeah. What did the other one look like?
Second surgery, is actually my cooler scar, and it was the safer surgery after they got my spine back together. I have a giant scar down my spine in the back where they just went in and they fused me from T10 down to L1. So I have 4 plates, 2 rods, and 8 screws.
So you can just sit up straight?
Yeah, sort of. Like the rest of my back still bends around it, and so I can still kind of slump into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, right here is always going to be
nice and rigid.
Yeah. I mean, I wish I had that when I was deadlifting before I got hurt.
You and me both. I got the worst posture in the world.
So
do you have any more surgeries scheduled? Like you're trying to make some improvements?
No. Is there any hope for it? They said normally like people have to go back in and like fix the screws.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they'll go back out and some of the bone will lice away a little bit.
Yeah. And so they have all these things. And I've gone in for numerous checkups and CTs, and they said that the screws were perfectly placed, and they haven't seen anyone with a better setup than mine. Yeah. They said the one thing I need to worry about is what I'm getting back and trying to get after it and stuff like that is twisting and bending my rods. So
therapy wise, what's next for you? Is there hope that you could get back to doing more actual activity on your feet someday?
So the chances of me like walking on my own, I've been told it like less than 1%, but I mean, I'm the king of small percentages. I'm 3% of the world's population as a ginger. I have blue eyes, which means I'm 1% of that population. And I'm a paraplegic, which means I'm 2% of the world's population. So I like small numbers.
That's going on a quote of some kind. I got to make note.
It's small numbers are easier for me to count. So less than 1% chance of me walking on my own, but that's without any kind of technology, like spinal implants, which they're coming out with. But
and there's probably, I mean, we've all seen we've watched the video you got you doing like rope climbs in the gym and training and doing, you know, Olympic work and shit still, which it's hard not to see that and be like, this is, I'm going to the gym right now. Because I was like, yeah, I probably won't train today. My knee's a little sore. I'm feeling a little tired. Like, oh, shit. Kevin, you motherfucker. I'm going to the gym now. There's no excuses. When
Following you on Instagram just makes me... It's inspiring because, you can't complain about where you're at if you're out there crushing. I mean, it was weeks later, you were in a pool, right?
Yeah.
Smiling.
It was about 3 weeks later. I love swimming. Like I was a swimmer throughout my entire childhood, and I really like swimming. And so being able to get back in the pool and move around and feel like, so I don't want to feel like, say like I feel confined in my chair or anything like that. But when I'm in the pool, like I can move just as well as anyone else. Like there's nothing I can't do in the pool. My back gets relaxed. I get like the decompression. It's just really cool for me.
I myself think the pool is cool because it's one of the environments where gravity gets off my dick for 5 minutes. It allows me to move around. Kevin, you had this dazed state of just this week that was really, I mean, intense is not the word. You were pushed to the absolute limit of what your body could tolerate and still keep going. When did you first sort of emerge from the pain and the sedation and stuff to kind of get your head around what had happened? And you had that you had to have that moment where it's like, what happens now?
I can remember distinctly like just going in and out of like the drug fall. They had me on Dilaudid, which is an amazing drug.
I heard it's amazing.
It is.
Do you have
enjoy
any?
It. Yeah.
not anymore. They took that away from me pretty quickly. So I needed to learn to lie about like, hey, what 1 to 10? What's your pain at?
10.
I'm like a 3. All right, we're gonna take the Dilaudid away. I meant 10.
Is that because I thought you were gonna get addicted to it?
Yeah, it's pretty addicting. Yeah. I don't think I'd ever get addicted to like painkillers. They just make me feel horrible. Like my doctors to this day still want me to like take painkillers and stuff like that. And I've told them,
well, they're getting paid to push that shit. Right.
So like even when I went to my doctor last time, I was like, I don't want any more of my painkillers. I'm fine. Like, I'll deal with the soreness and pain a little bit. That's better to me than the way these make me feel. And he's like, well, I'm just going to prescribe them for you anyway.
Aren't you like most people? Don't you want to run away from your pain? No, thank you. I'll face this.
Yeah. I don't know. Painkillers don't, another interesting ginger fact is that anesthetics don't work as well on us. Our liver metabolizes them faster, and so they don't really work very well for me. They just make me feel like shit.
Wow, we're learning a lot about gingers today.
Ginger facts.
Yes, I mean, at one point did you say, this had happened, you know, the odds are stacked against me. Yeah. Certainly my life is never going to be the same again.
I remember going in and out of, I don't want to say consciousness, but kind of like coherency. And just kind of each time I would become coherent, kind of think about my situation, think about what was going on, and you know, there wasn't a second I wasn't surrounded by like friends and family. Like my parents flew out, my brother and sister flew out, like half my cousins flew out, and just everyone just came out, all friends and like people. Like I had friends from elementary school that I still talk to every once in a while. Like one of them flew out because she heard about it and was hanging out with me. So I had a lot of support and a lot of people to kind of like soundboard off of and kind of talk to.
The story spread really quickly. We all are immediately aware of it. Mm-hmm. I think the coolest part from my perspective was just that, you know, anybody can talk shit about CrossFit. There's plenty of obvious things to critique CrossFit over, but one of the things that's still quite strong is that the community just fucking responded so powerfully and so quickly to you.
Yeah, and I give 100% credit. Like, so I've been friends with the people over at Barbells for Boobs for years. Z and her whole team have been amazing to me as a competitor before I got hurt. And once I got hurt, Z and everyone just kind of stepped up even more and made sure everyone knew what was going on. Like they literally shut down operations for Barbell Spoofs like a week to come up with like OR Strong and design the logo and set up everything up for me and set up the Fundly account and like made that their main premise for like almost a full week. And I literally owe them and their entire organization my life. Like they're amazing people.
Yeah. How long did it take after you had been in the hospitalized and had surgeries and stuff like that to start doing anything physically active?
They wouldn't let me move. I tried to. I asked for a wheelchair a couple times, and they wouldn't let me move until I think 8 days after my accident, 9 days after my accident. Mm-hmm. The same week I flew out to Craig, so they're like, "Well, you're gonna go to Craig. You might as well get you used to a wheelchair." So. Got me up in a wheelchair and it was interesting, you know, sitting up for the first time.
Yeah.
Really weird.
Did you have that moment like, wow, this is, I'm now one of these people. This is me.
No, my first thought was, I'm going to fall over. it was like literally sitting on a yoga ball with in like a cross leg position and trying to sit straight up.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Imagine.
Like they were holding me and they would let go and I would just.
So you have to engage your muscles in a different way than you used to? Or?
Yeah. So like when you guys are sitting here, even though you probably don't realize it, like your glutes are like compensating for shifts and.
That explains that feeling.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Your like hip flexors are keeping you pulled tight so you can kind of compensate for where you're shifting and sitting.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say to compensate for where you're shitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
That too.
That too. Like that. Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother problem for paraplegics.
We have to talk about this.
Yeah. But so all I have is what's left of my abdomen and my low back, which was at the time had been torn off my spine and then sewn back on. Mm-hmm. So I really I only had like my abs to hold me upright. So it was a little weird to sit
around. So what muscles can fire and which muscles can't? Where does it kind of cut off?
So my injury line's right below my belly button, mm-hmm. But I have full, I won't say control, I have full... I can flex all my abs, so my abs still work, all of them. Mm-hmm. The ones below
you got a six pack?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Even now, Kevin, what is my excuse? Shit. I'm like, this motherfucker's got a six pack.
So, man. The funny thing is the lower two abs like are on delay. So like if I flex my abs or do anything like that, like I can feel the top ones kick on automatically, like you would. Uh-huh. And then like 3 or 4 seconds later, their lower abs are like, yeah, I guess we'll do something.
That's interesting.
So and then there's my neurosurgeon did some tests and some of my like the vertebrae and the nerves that are kind of above my injury line are noticing that things aren't firing below my injury line. They're starting to try to like go down and innervate some of that stuff. So I have a few, I'm getting back a little bit of hip flexor on each side. Oh. Like nothing big and nothing I can really do, but it makes it easier to do stuff because I can kind of move my hips around and shift and stuff. So
it's an incredible lesson of this too, is like your body took such a hugely stressful, shattering, you know, deeply shaking injury and look how it still keeps fighting on to try to, you know, grab back
everything.
Function and re-innervate. And that's why I guess you're a small percentage guy, but there's never a reason to abandon a small percentage, especially now when we're emerging into a future where there's all kinds of interventions that could come.
Yeah.
It's not, there's no way of knowing in 10 years time what Kevin might be able to do, if especially if he keeps being as fit as he can in the meantime.
Well, and the way I look at it is that most people who've gone through this situation that I'm going through right now weren't as active or as healthy. Like, I mean, not that I was the greatest person ever before I got hurt, but I definitely was a little bit fitter and a little bit, you know, ate a little bit better than most people.
And it makes you more resilient right there.
I credit it to me still being alive. They told me that the blood loss is usually what kills people. And I'm 100% convinced that the fact that my red blood cell count was so high from training and the way I ate that it saved my life. When I came out, I, like most people, are anemic, and have like no protein stores and just kind of screwed in that level and had to get them back up within a week. My protein stores are normal. My iron count was fine. Like everything was back to pretty much a normal level, which is low for me, but you know, healthy for most other people.
I just had that chat with Mark Devine, like being strong. Was it Mark saying being strong makes you tougher and harder to kill is the best reason to be strong?
I think that's a Ripto quote.
Ripto, I think he referenced Ripto in the talk he did at our mastermind meeting.
Right.
This is a great example of it because you were strong. It had nothing to do with, yeah, you were prepping to win something, but you had prepared your body for the most intense kind of battle, and it's given you a chance. And you just made an interesting quote, actually. You said, it wasn't like I was the best person before. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a hint that you think this has not all been, of course, a negative experience.
Oh, no. Like, there's, I don't know, in my life, I've done a lot of stupid things. I wasn't always super fit. I mean, I always played sports. You know, when I got to college, I did a lot of dumb shit, and
college.
You know, I got pretty fat. Like, I went from like 180 pounds my freshman year to like 245 by the beginning of my sophomore year.
Oh,
gains.
At the time,
gains, son.
At the time, I thought I was like, yeah, I'm lifting big weight. And that's why I gained all the weight. And I look back at it, I'm like, no, you were just fat, dude.
You were drinking beer and benching too much.
It's exactly what I was doing. And so, like, there's, it's one of those things, like, bad things happen, but usually there's always good coming out. I mean, I was really raised in a religious household. Like, I grew up Lutheran, and I've always kind of had a faith that kind of got me through a lot of that stuff, where I can look back at some of the worst things that ever happened to me and kind of see why they had happened for the best things to happen. You know, I got kicked out of school after my sophomore year of college. And that's when I found CrossFit. That's when I found rugby. That's when I found all the sports that I still love to this day. That's when I met my girlfriend that I've been with for almost 7 years now, has been taking care of me ever since I got hurt. And it's why I moved out to Denver. It's literally my whole life up to this, like up to now, was based off something bad that happened. And so I kind of look at the situation, and that was my first thought when I got hurt is, you know, yeah, this sucks. This is horrible. This is the worst thing I probably hopefully have to deal with. But hopefully, because this is the worst thing that's happened to me, the greatest thing that's ever going to happen to me is also going to come out of the situation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we can talk about some of the good things that have come out of this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. This is Andrea Ager, and you're listening to Barbell Shrug. For the video version, go to barbellshrug.com.
Barbell Shrug is brought to you by you. To learn more about how you can support the show, go to barbellshrug.com and sign up for the newsletter.
And we're back with Kevin Ogar.
There he is.
And you know what? We were all pretty scared. I really wanted to know. I was too scared to ask. He made me feel better during the break. But
Kevin, you know, tell us about your cock.
All the ladies out there want to know.
I get this question. It's not the first time I got this question. It's usually from women, but they always ask if my junk still works. And the comment went down, yes, it still works. I don't have any control over it, so it's like being a 13-year-old boy again.
So you got a great excuse.
Yeah.
You just roll around with a hard on.
Jesus. You joke, but sometimes I do, and like I'll just look down. I'm like, oh, well, he's awake. I hope no one notices. Let's keep rolling through here.
Wow, man. Fascinating. What other curious things have you discovered about your new daily rituals and habits, like things that are now... much different, like I guess going to the bathroom is the whole thing, you know, showering, all these little daily activities people take for granted.
Yeah, it's like a damn good thing we don't remember, like being like 1 or 2 or 3 years old, because the shit sucks. Like having to learn how to like poop again and wipe your own ass and shower and everything is, it's a little weird. I will say that I now have an excuse to take a really long time when I'm pooping, so it's a nice little relaxing break where I sit there and like
iPad, man.
I read like half a book, like watch a whole season of Dexter, and then you know, come up the other end. Yeah,
man.
What makes the process so long? I mean, you obviously got to set up and all that kind of stuff.
So I gotta get a special chair with a cutout in it, since I don't have any. The way my injury works, you have like high motor neuron and low motor neuron, and they told me I was probably more or less low motor neuron. So instead of being like on the fritz, my muscles aren't really on the fritz. They're kind of like locked up, mm-hmm. Internally. And so, I have to get a special chair with a cutout on the side of it. So it raises me over the tiller seat. And, I literally have to, it's called, digitally stimulating.
That sounds fun.
It's a fancy way of saying I have to finger my butthole to get
come out. Not electronics.
Yeah.
Digits. As in your fingers.
So it's
not nearly as advanced as I thought.
Digital stimulation. Digital stimulation. Was that an iPad app or something? No, man.
I first said that, I was thinking, there's going to be this computer next to you, and there's these lights going, and you got to hook something up.
No, it is super low tech. The only way to get it, like the sphincter to loosen up, you go in there and just kind of make a nice little circle and hope something comes out. So you kind of have to plan your poops, like one poop a day at the exact same. I'm as regular as you can get. It's every single day at the same time.
Poop programming.
What time is that? I want to know when I should be shaking your hand.
It was actually
like right before you got here.
It was right before I got here. So I showered afterwards. Don't worry. So yeah. And then like showering, you have to flip. I have a special chair for that too, where I hop over onto a chair and kind of, has like use you know those railings you see in like handicapped bathrooms. Yeah. We actually do use those. Mm-hmm. So you have to like.
So don't put shit on the railings, people.
Yeah.
And if you can poop in a different stall besides a handicapped bathroom, I'd really appreciate it, because that's the only place I can go to take a piss.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember I was at a Padres game, and there's a couple guys trying to get into the handicap area, mm-hmm. and like. You know, at a ball game, like everyone's just going, and people were just going in there and pissing all over the seat. And there were some of them were like, "Hey, stop doing that shit. You're being a jerk."
So I don't have to switch over to the toilet to go to the bathroom. Yeah. I can actually, you know, it's called IC, it's called intermittent cathing, so I can just like cath from my chair, go pee. But I need somewhere to actually do it. I can't just like roll into the men's room and like whip my junk out and like jam a tube in and hey everybody, how's it going?
Yeah, just do that in front of the urinal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So and my chair doesn't fit in like normal stalls, and so there's been times where I've like rolled into, actually on the way here flying here, I rolled into a bathroom to go to the bathroom before I got on my flight, and every single stall was open except for the handicap one. This dude decided that that was the one he wanted to go to because it was comfy. So I just sat outside the door till he was done. Like, I can't feel it. I mean, I don't have like the pressure that I need to pee. So I can sit there. I just kind of have to time it. And so I just sat outside and waited for him to walk out. I go, hey, thanks.
To make critiquing eye contact with him after he gets up. You know, we're just at a comedy show.
You don't
show.
Even have to. I think he'll never use that one again.
We're at that Tony Hinchcliffe comedy show. He had this whole bit about everybody just shoots right through that 1, 2, 3 stall and that cushy, luxuriously open handicap stall. It's like, you talk about that moment where you're sitting in there and you see quite dramatically the wheels roll up and a slight pause. You go, oh shit. He starts like, do I pick one leg up? And what's my play here? And he gets out. He says, what do you do? He said he went CP.
He went cerebral palsy.
What you do is you pick one arm up and you start limping and you go in circles. And go, hey. And he started doing his bit. But it's curious to hear I've actually
done it.
Waited for a guy to come out of there and you just gave him the look of shame. Like, you know, this is the only place. This is what I have left in this world, you son of a bitch. It's a spacious shit stall and look what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, I do that more so with like handicap parking. So I can't get out and out of my car without like the handicap parking, the van accessible one, because the doors don't open wide enough for me to get my chair and pull it in. And so like I literally like will roll. And one of my pet peeves is people who are overweight and get handicap stickers because they're overweight. And so I'll literally roll past them in my car. I go, no, you probably need that more than I do. Me and my wheelchair, we're going to go down park over here and have to wheel all the way to the store. And you just kind of see them.
Oh, shit, man.
What do I say?
So, I mean, it's the only place I can park. And so I get frustrated with people because they're like, they'll pop. Like, I saw a guy pop out of his truck, hang his handicap tag, and then pick up a generator and carry it inside. I was like, you obviously need that. Awesome, bro. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Damn, to be fair, though, do you used to shit in the
yeah, Kevin, but let's be fair now.
To be fair, calling you out. To be fair, I used to. Yeah, that thing is luxurious and awesome. I will say I never parked in handicapped spots. I refuse.
I don't do that either.
I refuse to. I thought that was like, even before I got hurt, I would call people out for doing that.
I don't do it just because I'm afraid I'm going to get towed away. No ethical reason.
Really. No moral reason.
The handicap stall thing was my gig because I was just too fat to go into the normal stall. I can't fucking. It was like Chris Farley in the bathroom at the airport. I was like, I can't reach my ass to wipe it. I gotta go over here.
See, the handicap stall thing isn't as big a deal to me as the handicap parking because like we're 2% like paraplegics actually like need those stalls or like 2% of the world's population. It's like running into a unicorn.
This is good to know because I'll tell you right to your face, I'm not going to stop shitting in the handicap stall.
The one thing that is like when there's 18 stalls and then one handicap stall and I roll in there and I'm like, you chose that one over the rest of the 18 and you have...
So if they're all full, maybe.
It's really just me being like, I want that stall. You're in it. Please get out of it now.
Yeah.
Does 2% of the world's population sound like a really high percentage to anyone else?
Well, you're doing the math. You're so much smarter than all of us. You're
thinking 2 out of every 100 people is paraplegic? That sounds really high.
Yeah, I guess how many people?
Well, 4 billion paraplegic people? Or paraplegic, quadriplegic, or have some kind of like spinal cord injury that prevents them from using a full function of their limbs.
Oh, yeah, wow. That's pretty high.
I didn't know it was that high.
Yeah. It's not necessarily even.
So you pointed it out.
I thought it would have been like 1 in 10,000 or something.
That's the number I was given at Craig. So
like
I don't fact check doctors. So they could be completely full of shit. Lying
full
to me.
Of shit, man.
You look smart to me, sir. So, you've got a coat on.
So let's go back to the dick questions.
Okay, go for it.
You said that you get random boners just like you're 13 years old, like walking around junior high school. But can you get a voluntary boner? Like if you want to get a boner, can you get a boner?
Yeah. I mean, I can, but it's because there's great pills or what I call a dick pricks. They have little
shots.
Yeah, they have shots that you can inject.
Oh my god!
Oh really?
Yeah, straight up. So.
Oh man, I want to give a shot in my dick.
What do you think, Ashley? Should we try it? She's down.
Ashley's like, whatever. As long as you have a boner, I'm cool.
This is like porn industry innovation right there.
So it's actually they have a lot of different ways because one of the big things it's not really talked about a lot because I guess like sex is taboo or whatever. But one of the big things they talk to you about, one of the classes they actually make you go through, whether you're a guy or a girl in rehab, is like sex ed. Like, mm-hmm. how do you have sex or how do you do anything like that? Like post injury when you have a spinal cord injury. Cause I mean, most guys don't have a lot of control over it. So, I mean, they
tell you lesson number one, ladies and gentlemen, you're new to this stuff. So I'm gonna give you some information. First things first, chicks are going to ask you about your dick and bars. Here's what you need to keep in mind. First things first, you tell them this. They run you through the whole protocol. Man, I know not to switch gears off the dick stuff, but
no, I want to hear the rest of what he was about to say.
They have a whole
slew of things like to help for girls. It's not it, so I always kind of thought that girls had the had a little bit harder for because some of the paraplegic friends I have a little bit harder because it's like harder for them to cath. It's harder for them to do some of the stuff. But the one place they have it easier is in like the sex realm, because they don't have to worry about like erections or anything, and right. So they don't have as much stuff on like sex for women as they do for guys, but they have a whole bunch of different things. Like they run you through. They actually gave me a book that's called "Is Fred Dead?"
Is Fred Dead?
Yeah, and it was written by a guy who's paraplegic on like sex after spinal cord injury. And
the guy's name's Fred.
I think he was calling his penis Fred, but that's
Fred is the penis.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, so
it's a minute to put that together, huh, Chris?
It is.
I'm paralyzed in my mind sometimes, especially after a 2 a.m. night.
It's a whole book, and it has like all this stuff on like where to get sex toys and what kind of like erection help you can get and where to get it and how to talk to people about it. And but it's still a sex book, and so my doctor gave it to me, and I had it in my room at Craig, and I didn't think, I just had it sitting like underneath something, and my parents walked in, they're trying to like organize things for me, and my dad picked it up. He was, oh, this is a nice, and kind of set it down.
It's still as awkward for him as it was when you were 13 having this conversation.
Well, then it was even more awkward because my aunt came in later and saw the same book, and I was like, oh, son of a bitch. So
we've all seen videos of you doing, you know, cool workouts that, you know, you would hope you'd be able to do after you have some type of traumatic accident, like doing rope climbs or overhead presses or something. But we've seen a few videos, but what comprehensively does your training look like these days? Like, what else are you doing?
So, I mean, I'm pretty much still just doing like a kind of like a lifting and CrossFit style stuff. Like, it's just a change of focus. Like before injury, I was focused on like being the best CrossFit athlete I could, like all the skills and drills I could possibly get my hands on, getting as strong as possible, making sure my motor was up, just that kind of stuff. Now it's switched, and most everything I do is geared towards making, you know, the original meaning, like the original purpose of CrossFit was to make train not to suck at life, you know? So that's basically what I've gotten back to. So a lot of my training is based on stuff that I know I struggle with. So I struggle with balance and like front to back and side to side. And so a lot of my stuff is trained with that. So I was at CrossFit Costa Mesa with Max Mormont, and he was really helping me kind of try to figure some of this stuff out. And one of the workouts had pistols in it. He's like, well, you obviously can't do pistols. And I was like, yeah, but I can do. So we figured out that we could do one-handed wall balls. And the reason being is that it has the same kind of premise where it's that unilateral work, but it's also a lot of balance work for me. And so it's not just throwing and catching one-handed, but once I catch one-handed,
it's pulling you left and right.
Once it pulls me left and right, and so I can switch hands and kind of do that. So my approach to training now is I kind of still train with Matt Hathcock. Like, he's still my training partner. I think I slow him down a little bit, but he doesn't complain about it. So
screw that guy.
But you know what's interesting about that is that's what everybody, that should be the mindset in training. People do what other people are doing. They mimic, they take on programming, they do WOD because that's what everybody else is doing. You're in a position where you're returning to the very fundamentals of what training should be like. What are my specific issues, and what are the most creative ways I can help myself function better in this environment by choosing the right exercise?
Yeah. And so that's basically why I approach everything. So I just kind of look at Matt's programming, what he has for himself, and then I kind of try to figure out what I can switch out and benefit me the most. So I don't, someone asked me yesterday if like when we have a 400 meter run, if I just wheel 400 meters, excuse me. And I told him not usually, because like for me, wheeling 400 meters, it takes a really long time and I don't get winded. Like, it's not running for me anymore because I can coast. If I hit a hill, I just let go and just let the hill do the work for me. 'Cause I'm not stupid.
And I have these awesome wheels.
I hated running before I got hurt, so I'm not going to actually try to run harder now that I'm hurt.
Right.
And so, like, I switch out for, like, ski erging or rowing or something where, you know, it mimics that same cardiovascular aspect.
Yeah, the ski erg is probably great for you.
That seems great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're not mimicking shit.
You're using a lot of other tools that you wouldn't normally be using or that you might not have used a lot previously.
Yeah, I mean...
like, what are some of your favorite training tools now that you're paralyzed?
Sleds, prowlers. Are you
pulling them?
Pulling them, dragging them. Yeah. So I'll strap them to me and like wheel forward to mimic like having to drag something behind me.
Right.
Or I'll have a rope attached to them and do like actual pulls because it wants to yank me forward. And it's one thing I really struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing a lot more dumbbell work to get that balance back and kind of keep my shoulders healthy. A lot of the stuff is like... me working on stuff I know I didn't do, like, so like transfers where I have to press up and shift my body. So I do what I call paraplegic L-sits, where I put my feet up on like ab mats and then press into what looks like an L-sit, but it's really just me pressing up because that's one thing I really need to get really good at, to transfer safely. And so
and believe it or not, you're gonna get older
and shit's gonna get harder. Yeah,
it's gonna get really hard. I mean, it gets hard for everybody who ages, you know, just sitting on the toilet gets harder for everyone as they get older.
Yeah.
And now you're going to have to build up probably as much, I guess, muscle mass and as much coordination and everything while you're young so you can, you know, keep hold of that as long as possible.
Yeah. A big thing I do is I try to get out of my chair and onto the ground at least one time in every training session. Because
mm-hmm.
One of the big problems, if I'm rolling around and I hit a curb and I don't pop my wheel up properly, I'll eat it. Like, I'll fly straight out of my chair.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to know how to get back into my chair safely without, you know.
Yeah.
Tipping the whole thing or, you know,
there might not be anybody around.
Yeah. So I mean, Craig was actually really good at that. They literally like tip your chair over for you. Like, all right, get back in.
Just toss you over.
This is in Colorado.
Yeah, Craig Hospital in Colorado. They're like, to me, that they're the best spinal hospital you could go to. Like, most Olympians go there if they get any kind of spinal injury. I mean, there's big stories. No, like Eamon Van Dyken went there, and
that must be an extraordinary environment. I mean, one thing that comes to mind is all these years I'd noticed, like, research people had done on people who had been injured paralysis of this kind. And they always compare their happiness to other kinds of people. The classic one is, like, this group over here wins the fucking lottery and has $100 million still in their lap, and this is a population who had just had their life wrecked through similar injuries as you. There's a population of people you would swear would be miserable and would feel sorry for themselves, and the other one you would swear would be rich and rewarded and happy now. And of course, what is classic in those experiments is it's not the population you think. A year after the circumstances changed, the people who win all the money are miserable and fucking depressed and borderline suicidal because now their life has changed in ways they didn't expect. And the people who were able to regain a focus on what really matters and to make progress in their therapy, to be able to see their little toe wiggle one time and have to know that there's still reason to hope, and to put all their focus on these tiny little things and to appreciate what it is to drink a cup of coffee, to stand up straight in your chair while you're doing it, or to get out of bed on your own. All of a sudden, all the big things in life you thought were important are all stripped away, and now the most essential elements of life are all you can really focus on. Has that been your experience?
That's been exactly my experience. Like, Before injury, my focus was making the games. Like, that's all I was focused on. Like, that was it.
It's hard to be satisfied too. Like, you want more. And more.
My motto before I got hurt when I was training and competing was, you can be happy but never be satisfied, because there's always something to push more towards. And so now that I've gotten hurt and I've kind of gotten back to, you know, the roots of what I've always wanted to do with my life, and I have the time now to kind of focus on that. And it's really kind of changed my perspective. I still say, you know, make sure you're happy, but don't never be like satisfied. But I think I mean by satisfied now, more mean don't be stagnant, you know.
Do you think people could stand the gain just a lot? Like, you are in extreme sense going back and relearning everything you have to try to walk and to function. But there are so many people, just to make this practical, so many people who keep pushing forward, forward, forward all the time and forget that going back is a very useful thing. Like the most simple things you can imagine in your life, you could go back and revisit them and do them better and appreciate them for what they are.
Well, and I mean, that's the way I looked at training before I got hurt is, you know, never get away from the basics. And when I would catch myself not working on the basics of like weightlifting or gymnastics, I'd always make sure we, or Matt would always make sure we got back to working on that kind of stuff. Like we never stopped practicing like hollow body positions or, you know, set, like set up positions for snatching. I mean, I've probably done a few thousand snatches in my life and, you know, we never stopped practicing like the basics of those kind of things. And so I think everyone could benefit from going back to like the basics of anything in life and benefit.
There's always something you can go, there's always so far you can push when you're a great athlete. There's always so long you can push. You keep getting new things, new stimulus and new ways of motivating yourself. If you go back to something you do suck at, just to get a little better at it and to refine it, it spills forward. It's actually one of the most rewarding things. Like for me, just do handstand push-ups, like I always say, was one of the most rewarding things I ever imagined because I never saw myself even trying, much less doing. It was way better than bench pressing 700 pounds, you know?
That's been one of my favorite things about, you know, being in this wheelchair is I never have to do handstand push-ups again. I hate those things. They are the bane of my existence, and I don't care if I do ever walk again, I'm never doing those things again.
Do you have any advice for people who, I mean, have injuries, temporary or permanent? You know, we have people that are like, I sprained my ankle. They don't show up to train for 3 weeks. I'm like, what the hell is wrong with you? Yeah, there are coaches in here that will, you know, change the movements for you.
Yeah. So that's the big thing. Like, now that at our gym, people are kind of starting to figure that out because they're watching me and they're like, they can't come in and look at me and go, well, you know, my wrist kind of hurts, so I just didn't want to work out today.
You know, like skip the whole body. It's like the wrist.
Yeah, you heard me, Kevin. My wrist hurts.
So like just the, I guess, you know, you can always do something. Like there's never a reason to stop, you know, I don't want to say training, but, you know, improving at what you're doing, whether it be just, you know, your own personal fitness or the sport you're going for. There's always something you can do to train for. Just because you can't squat doesn't mean you can't go in there and work on like your shoulder stability, your shoulder health or something like that.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, little injuries make people better. Like if you bang up your wrist and now you can't do front squats like this, well, you have to go do something else you wouldn't normally do. And that helps build that variety for you.
Yeah. I call it forced rest days or like forced different focus days.
That happens to a buddies of mine in the MMA world. Like they have their few moves that they always do. And now all of a sudden they can't throw that special kick that always lands for them. So they have to like bring new tools into their arsenal.
That's I actually found out yesterday that's how the skier was developed is that the guy who built its daughter was Olympic skier. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, compartment syndrome's prevalent in them. And so when they couldn't ski anymore because they would mess their calves up. They would just, they made the skier, gave them a seat and had them do ski erg in their seats. So they could still work on their conditioning and their pull for skiing.
When they were beating up their lower legs too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Are you competing in anything now? I think I saw you on a basketball court in a photo somewhere.
Oh yeah. That was in Craig. That was actually like their temporary, physical therapy area while they're building their new, peak center, the new gym. I'm trying to get back into actual, what I didn't know, and I kind of feel like an ass for not knowing this beforehand, is there are a lot of adaptive CrossFit athletes out there.
Yeah.
There's way more than me. I'm not the first one. I'm not like reinventing the wheel here and being the first guy to like do a rope.
Reinventing the wheel by getting hurt.
Yeah.
And still training.
Yeah. There's a lot of other guys out there who are putting on competitions and a lot of organizations who are doing that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely gonna get back into competing.
Competitions specifically for adaptive athletes.
Yeah. There's a few. What is it? Adaptive Crossroads is a company that's been putting stuff on, and CrossFit Rubicon.
Yeah.
Puts people who run that company. And they put stuff on. I think they invited me down to a competition in November, and there's another one in August and stuff. And so you just go down there.
That's
and,
in Colorado?
That's in, I think those are in Texas.
Okay.
So.
Man, I got to see Kyle Maynard compete at sectionals.
Yeah.
I think it was 2010. I guess that was the one year they had sectionals.
Yeah.
And I'll tell people about Kyle and just briefly so they can get a frame.
Yeah, no arms, no legs.
Yeah, born without him. He was a collegiate wrestler.
Yeah. And now he does some MMA stuff and... Yeah, he does some pretty amazing things. Things that you would go.
This guy does anything he wants to do.
But, you know, they, for the Georgia sectionals, I was there as a spectator. And they had to run up Stone Mountain back. So like he strapped up and went, and then he came back.
He crawled on his belly up a mountain.
He came back later. I don't know what happened in between, but I was doing some other stuff. I was actually working, so I didn't follow it. But it was really amazing to see him, how they changed some things where he was jumping over something with his whole body, you know, in place of another movement some other folks were doing. And it was just, I was sitting there watching him and going, man, I have no excuses to not do anything.
Is that the CrossFit No Excuses guy?
Yeah.
I actually got introduced to him via the phone last night for the first time. The dude texts faster than I do.
with what? His voice.
The humerus of his arm. Mm-hmm. And so I guess he texts with that, but like he was getting texts out before I could get him back to him.
Wow.
So, I mean, like he's a perfect example of like finding ways to adapt and do things. Like there's not anything I don't think he can do. And, you know,
the thought that popped in my mind was some people learn this the hard way and other people can learn this now. I mean, there's no time for sitting around and waiting for opportunity. You have to, I guess, constantly search for ways to say yes to opportunities and push forward and do the things you really want to do in this life. Or you could be the kind of person who's always only noticing the reasons why they can't do something or shouldn't, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things I really want to do now that I'm out of the hospital and back to kind of CrossFit, you know, it'll probably be like a year or so down the road when I kind of get stable and get like my regular life back to as normal as possible for me. And, I had a huge support system. I had the whole CrossFit community behind me. I had my family behind me. I have great friends. Like I was never alone. Like I always had someone there to make sure that I was in, you know, the best spirits I possibly could be. Like it's not easy staying positive through a lot of that stuff. You know, you have those thoughts creep in your mind. Like this sucks. This is horrible. I just don't want to try. Like everyone does. If anyone tells you they didn't, they're full of shit. And so I saw it was really easy for some of the other people that I was in the hospital with, who didn't have the support I had, to kind of go the other way. And you know,
a sad thing to witness, man.
I didn't think it was, when I was in there, I didn't think it was fair that I got all the support and they didn't. So one of the things I really want to do is once I get stable, once I can start using, you know, what the CrossFit community is giving me to help other people, is to go back and make sure those people have some form of support. Like,
is that the calling now, man? I mean, is that one of the big missions you feel drawn to?
It's one of them. Another big thing I've actually been working on it for almost 2 years now with a buddy of mine. He's a two-tour Marine and got blown up in Iraq twice. And
you got blown up twice?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Has like TBIs and short-term, he has a TBI with a traumatic brain injury, neck problems. He had really bad short-term memory loss. And so he was really struggling when he got out and found CrossFit. I started working with him on like training and like nutrition stuff. And he told me it completely changed his life around. Like he like just flipped everything from like being depressed about stuff and just not wanting to do things to just the gung ho. So he brought me on a project he wanted to work on where we're going to try to raise funds and take like mood disorder and like physically disabled vets and basically pay for their first year of CrossFit.
You put an extraordinary perspective. All of a sudden I had this sense of like, you know, we all were saying, yeah, it's great. The community responded to Kevin and amazing. He'll be okay. But that's awesome to hear in a powerful way that, yeah, when you're in your position though, you will receive that support, but then it only serves to highlight maybe the one of the key messages you need to see was that these other people aren't getting that support, dude. There is no fucking Ogar Strong community that rises up to take care of this random kid or this woman who had this injury. No. Now, what do they do? Who is there to help them out and give them the support?
You know, so all these people, the only people that had supported them was their insurance. And I don't think I need to tell you guys how crappy that is to have insurance company who don't care about you be the only people that are supporting you.
Yeah.
We've started working on getting a 501c3 nonprofit status and raising funds and paying for not only just the CrossFit side of stuff, but also bringing on like the nutrition side of things and just kind of blowing it up from there.
What's that going to be called?
The Reveille Project.
The Reveille?
Yeah. So it's the wake up call in the military. And so Ryan, the guy's name.
I remember that.
Well, he was
Reveille.
You always slept through it.
I did. Yeah.
And so he said it was kind of like CrossFit was kind of like his wake up call, like the bugle blasting in his ear and waking him up. And so that's he named it. I mean, he started this in 2011. He didn't actually approach me about it until like end of 2012, 2013. Mm. So, but we're gonna do that, and then I eventually want to take the OR Strong name and whatever I can build it up into, and you know, work with CrossFit and get these like newly injured people, once they get done with rehab into CrossFit, you know, it's saved me mentally and physically completely. And so I don't see any reason why I shouldn't try to get
I feel like
more people into it.
What can we do to help this guy? It's like, shit, man, we got to rally around and help you get some heat around this effort.
What's your average day look like now?
When I'm back home, it's pretty similar to what it used to be. You know, wake up, breakfast, poop. and I usually spend most of my time either like at the gym. I'm back to coaching. Not really getting paid, dude. I just really love coaching. Like, I've been coaching people and training people since I was 21.
How old are you now?
28.
Okay.
I'm basically 29. I'm getting almost 30.
You're a better coach now? You say, suck it up, you know, suck it up and run, guys. They don't give you shit, I guess, now. They say, yes, sir.
You know, I think I am a better coach, not because I, like, make people feel bad because they're...
It's one of the key qualities of good coaching, making your clients feel bad.
Yeah, no, but I've had to... so before, you know, I could rely on, like, if I wanted someone to move some way, I could show them, like, all right, this is how I want you to look when you're squatting. This is what you look like. This is what I want you to look like. And now I have to rely completely on tactile and verbal cues to kind of get people to move the way I want them to. And so
that's
it's I think... I don't know if it's made me a better coach yet, but I think it's going to make me a better coach because I think it's going to help me figure out how to reach more people with coaching.
Communication.
Yeah.
You're going to have to be a better communicator. Yeah.
So, I mean, I spend like 3 or 4 days a week coaching at CrossFit Unbroken alongside Matt and Nathan over there. And
what town is that in?
Inglewood, Colorado, basically Denver.
Okay. So a little close to Denver.
Yeah. And so I do that. I work out 3 or 4 days a week still. And then the rest of my time I usually spend trying as best I can, like answer emails or respond to people. I feel like I'm horrible at it because I feel like no matter how much I respond, I still like have people I haven't responded to yet. But I also was a professional meathead for 7 years. And so I don't know if exactly like emails and paperwork is my forte.
Not your unique genius.
Yeah.
Well, we heard when you came in that you had the barbells dropping for your ringtone for the message tone.
I do, yeah. It's actually fairly common at Unbroken to have that as your text tone. So
you need to send us that file because we get asked every day, can you sons of bitches make a ringtone out of that noise on the intro?
Where'd you find that? I don't even know. I mean, I remember we talked about it on a show. Someone asked for it, and we're like, oh, no, someone make it.
So one of our training partners, Christian, found it, I guess, either listening to you guys and you guys put up a link or something like that. He found it and put it on his phone. And then when we heard it, I was like, yeah, I'm going to steal that from you. And so I had him send me the link and I stole it from him. And then other people heard it and I would just forward. We kept forwarding around the link.
We need to make that like available on the website. I don't know.
We kept forwarding around the link that it was at.
So what?
Tell the people listening that you're talking about the barbell dropping.
Oh, we're talking about the barbell at the intro of the show, the tink, 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 tink.
Yeah.
We'll figure out a way this time.
That was a good...
Let's end this thing once and for all. We will put that in the show notes, a link to that damn thing. I'll make it if I have to. I'll figure out a way. It can be done.
I mean, it sounds like maybe it was on our website at one time.
It was on your website at one point in time.
Oh, God, that's how bad our memory was.
So that, because I remember clicking on it, it was a big barbell shrug header, and then they had that thing, and you clicked on it.
No memory of that.
So...
We do things and then forget about it.
No, it's funny because like a bunch of people at our gym would have it, and so we'd be lifting and... Like someone's phone would go off and all of us would think it was ours. So we'd all, nope, not mine. So. Oh,
man. All right. Is there anything else you want to touch on? Anything you want to promote? We got what? Reveille?
Yeah. Reveille Project. Yeah. I'm going to be.
Ogar Strong.
Ogar Strong. I'm going to be at the Barbells for Boobs booth for a lot of the day today. So if people want to come by and chat or just kind of check out.
Well, this will post later, so it doesn't matter. But. What we'll do is we'll on social media today, we'll make sure to inform people of where they can check you out.
Yeah, what time are you going to be over there?
I'm heading there here after I leave here.
Yeah, we can go by. We'll be at Fit Aid, and we'll be walking around the CrossFit Power. We need to stop by the Barbell for Boots booth.
Yeah, and we'll maybe send on Instagram, let people know that you're over there, and we just podcast it with you.
Yeah, those are my people. We're actually staying in Costa Mesa next to them. So,
nice.
Oddly enough, we couldn't find like a handicap accessible roll-in shower hotel like close to the like in Carson or Torrance or anything. Right. I'll just stay in Costa Mesa next to the Barbell Swoops. So
any big parties going on this weekend?
Oh man, I am not a partier. No. I did that when I was young, and now if it's past 9 o'clock and I'm not in bed, I'm a little pissy.
Well, maybe you can we'll get you all caffeinated up. You come out to our party Sunday. We're throwing one, aren't we, Mike? Sunday evening, we'll do some kind of party.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. I always want to throw a party. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna throw down. 9:30 rolls around. I'm like, fuck, I hope no one comes over. I just want to go to bed.
I am old.
So that's my only plans. I'm just hanging out at the games this weekend and kind of rolling around, trying to see and thank as many CrossFitters I can stop and see. You know, it's funny sometimes people like walk past me and wait till they're like right here and like yell at me and then like sprint on. And I'm like, I only bite once. You guys can come say like hi to me.
It is interesting. People think they're going to come talk to you and you're not going to like it or whatever, but you wouldn't be out rolling around if you didn't want to talk to people.
No, I'm a pretty friendly guy. Like it doesn't bug me when people stop me or want to talk to me or chat or anything like that. So.
And any hot girls that want to sit in his lap, I heard he'll just let you sit in his lap.
I have been known to give out wheelchair rides.
Have you met our friend Jackie? She likes wheelchair rides.
So it's fun. I was giving one of the Barbells for Boobs people a wheelchair ride, and I was again, I like to mess with people, so I got going pretty fast, and I just grabbed my wheels and stopped. And she kind of.
If people want to find you on Instagram, Twitter, where are the what's your handles there?
At Kevin Ogar.
Kevin Ogar, that's it.
Yep.
This is simple, man.
Yep. Make sure to go over to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we will inform you when we post these cool ass episodes and do other cool shit too.
Hey Kevin, you don't mind if we come out to the Denver area and train with you, right?
Absolutely not. Come on out. Yeah. I would love it.
Yeah, let's do that.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks for coming on. Yeah.